There's routinely anonymous activity on the perimeter of networks that amounts to someone checking if the door is locked.
Hackers targeted networks in Alaska using computers that were reportedly based in China. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Democratic House candidate Dmitry Shane is running on Medicare for All.
Look at the Alaska Native Medical Center. Nothing is rationed. People walk in, they get the best health care in the world, and that's the way it should be.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. You know your teenager is struggling, friends have changed, grades have dropped, and when you try to talk, they argue or ignore you. Don't wait until it gets worse. Take action by calling Alaska Crossings. Alaska Crossings has helped hundreds of teens gain back their confidence and self-esteem in a full, fun, outdoor environment. The program is now accepting applications for troubled teens ages 12 to 18. Visit alaskacrossings.org and apply today. Alaska Crossings. Youth succeed here. This message sponsored by Alaska Crossings.
A cybersecurity firm says Alaska was targeted by hackers using computers in China. The company, Recorded Future, documents repeated attempts to connect to several networks in Alaska before and after the state sent a trade delegation to China in May. According to the report, the scanning activity spiked when Governor Bill Walker announced the visit to China in March and again just after the delegation left the country. The data shows that Alaska Communications Systems Group, or ACS, and Alaska Power and Telephone Company were targeted in addition to the state's Department of Natural Resources. There's evidence that the scanning came from internet connections registered to Tsinghua University in Beijing. Walker's administration is pushing back against the report. Press Secretary Austin Baird says there was web traffic targeting the state, but no hack actually happened.
The state of Alaska, like most state governments, like most businesses, like most companies that do business online or do business internationally, there's routinely anonymous activity on the perimeter of networks that amounts to someone checking if the door is locked.
Baird says the state does not believe that China was the original source of the scanning activity. He says the state contacted law enforcement as a precautionary measure, but doesn't plan to do any further investigation into the source of the web traffic. A candidate for state senate and her husband have been accused of misleading the state in applying for food stamps. Candidate Rebecca Hollett is a Republican running against State Representative Chris Birch. They're competing in next week's primary election for an Anchorage Senate seat. Hollett says that last year has been hard on her family. Her husband, she says, was laid off. According to a charging document, Hollett and her husband did not disclose several bank accounts. The document says they were above the resource limit for food stamps during the time they received benefits this year. But the Republican state Senate candidate says she's not scared. She called the allegations false, claiming that it was an effort to steal the election. Primary elections are August 21st. That's coming up on Tuesday. Arraignment for Rebecca Hollett is scheduled for August 24th. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on the flight scene crash that killed five people earlier this month. On the evening of August 4th, a de Havilland Beaver operated by K2 Aviation was on a one-hour flight seeing tour when it crashed into a steep ridge southwest of Denali known as Thunder Mountain. The report says the pilot, later identified as Craig Lason, reached K2's Talkeetna offices by satellite phone a few minutes after the crash. Lason told ground personnel that the plane had impacted a mountain and that people on board needed rescue. The first call only lasted a couple of minutes before the signal was lost. After multiple further attempts, contact was reestablished. Lason said at the time that he was trapped in the wreckage of the plane and that there were two possible fatalities on board. Later that evening, the National Park Service launched a search and rescue helicopter, but poor weather conditions prevented rangers from reaching the crash site. For the next 36 hours, Park Service and military aircraft continued to attempt to spot the downed plane. On the morning of August 6th, Denali National Park mountaineering ranger Chris Erickson was able to reach the crash site while suspended from a rescue helicopter. While there, Erickson confirmed that four of the five people on board were deceased but could not see the plane's fifth occupant. With the weather closing in, Erickson had only about 5 minutes to survey the wreckage. 4 days later, a longer short-haul mission was launched, and rangers were able to locate the fifth and final occupant of the plane. All four passengers were Polish citizens. Their names have not been released. NTSB investigator David Williams traveled to the scene of the accident and writes that the airplane broke into multiple pieces after colliding with the ridge. In a statement last week, National Park Service personnel stated that conditions on Thunder Mountain are too dangerous to attempt a recovery of the aircraft and its occupants. Edie Grunwald is a retired Air Force colonel who's running to be the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor. She also was fired at the direction of former Governor Sean Parnell. The dismissal was part of the fallout from the Alaska National Guard scandal that contributed to Parnell's defeat 4 years ago. Edie Grunwald is also the mother of David Grunwald, the slain Palmer teenager whose murder has played out in headlines since 2016. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
On October 20th, 2014, Grunwald lost her job as Human Resources Director for the Alaska National Guard. Two others also were fired. The dismissals came after a report by the Guard's Virginia-based Office of Complex Investigations. The report detailed how Alaska National Guard leaders failed to address reports of sexual assault, among other problems. Then-Governor Parnell spoke with Alaska Public Media's Lori Townsend about the firings the next day.
How did this decision come about that led to this dismissal yesterday?
The issues identified in the report that I asked for, when I asked the National Guard Bureau to bring in their Office of Complex Investigations, the report was pretty scathing with respect to the troops and airmen not having the trust and confidence in their leadership. And clearly, that played a role in this.
Parnell cited the confidentiality of personnel records when he said at the time that he wouldn't comment further on the firings. Grunwald notes that her name didn't appear in the report. However, the report generally didn't name individuals. Grunwald says Parnell made a mistake.
I think that he had to show that he took action in the Guard. It was a wrong action on his part, but it was because I think he got the wrong advice.
Grunwald says Parnell apologized to her over what happened. For his part, Parnell says he expressed sorrow to Grunwald over the murder of her 16-year-old son, and that he may have expressed sorrow over her losing her job in the public eye. But he says he didn't recall apologizing to her over any action that he took. Grunwald says she lost her job because those above her in the chain of command were looking to take a symbolic action as a result of the scandal.
I happen to be low-hanging fruit. Usually the people at the top or around the top or is viewed at the top, you know, it looks like you're making change when you take them down. I say take them down, you remove them from their position.
As Human Resources Director, she was responsible for making sure that personnel actions taken by commanders met federal regulations. She did hear reports of wrongdoing.
And there were several occasions where people would reach out to me on things that were going on, and I immediately reported it to that commander that may have been in charge.
Grunwald also says she'd follow up to make sure an investigation was done. According to the Alaska National Guard, Grunwald had no oversight of sexual assault allegations. Grunwald says she did what she was responsible for doing.
I thought we did an excellent job. We just didn't have the support of higher authority and the commanders of the unit.
Parnell has endorsed Anchorage State Senator Kevin Meyer in the lieutenant governor's election. The primary is Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Meantime, political support for Grunwald is expected to play a role in the jury selection process for the trial of one of the four young men charged with murdering her son in 2016. The attorney for Dominic Johnson is seeking to ask potential jurors if they have supported Grunwald's campaign for lieutenant governor. Johnson is scheduled to go to trial in October in the killing. Defense attorney Lyle Stoller has added several questions about the campaign to juror questionnaires, telling the judge that people who donated money to the campaign could not be impartial if they were seated on the jury. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, erosion is eating away at Utqiagvik's coastline.
These lower houses right here, the lower-lying houses, the water certainly reached them. Well, not inside their houses, but it comes up to the houses for sure.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Anchorage entrepreneur Dimitri Shane is one of two main candidates in the Democratic primary for Alaska's only U.S. House seat. The other is Elise Galvin, whom we featured yesterday. Though Shane has amassed serious campaign money, he is well behind Galvin in fundraising. He's collected $50,000 from donors, put in nearly that much of his own money, and loaned his campaign another $100,000. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin asked him about his motivations.
Shane was born in the Soviet Union and immigrated to Anchorage in 1993. He was 12. Shane says the experience helps him understand what makes America exceptional.
The American freedoms and values like free press, independent judiciary, this belief and notion that no one is above the law, even the President of the United States. And now I see all these values under attack.
Shane says America still sees itself as exceptional, but somewhere along the line stopped working at it, stopped trying to solve its problems. He says anti-government rhetoric on the right helped set that stage.
Our current elected leaders have sold us on the notion that our government is completely worthless and cannot solve problems, and to some extent deserves to be attacked from abroad, and is being attacked internally by our elected leaders as well.
Shane wants to turn that around. He's running as a progressive. He takes inspiration from Bernie Sanders and has made Medicare for All the banner issue of his campaign. That would be a single-payer system, government-funded.
In Alaska, we have the highest cost of health care and health insurance. And to me, it's just obvious that a single-payer Medicare for All type system would benefit Alaska enormously.
Shane thinks it will save money, citing a study that says Medicare for All could cost $2 trillion less over a decade than the total Americans and their government now spend on health care. Others say that conclusion is based on best-case scenarios. The website PolitiFact.com rated the claim half-true. Shane doesn't think a special health care tax is needed, but he does want to repeal part of last year's tax bill that cut taxes for the wealthy and for corporations. Some within the progressive wing of the Democratic Party have called themselves Democratic Socialists. Shane doesn't.
I think that term is fine. I myself am a pretty successful capitalist, so I think it would be hard for me to to call myself that.
For years, Shane worked as an accountant, balancing the books for tribes around the state. Now he's an e-commerce entrepreneur. He sells a metal planter called the Nice Planter online. He met his wife, Melissa, when they were students at West High. She became a doctor and now works at South Central Foundation. They were a family of four, but they recently doubled in size after taking in four sisters who needed a home. All of them, except Shane himself, get single-payer health care through the Native health system, and Shane is a big fan. Critics of publicly funded health care often say it will lead to rationing of expensive services. Shane says there's proof to the contrary.
I just say go to Tudor Diplomacy Drive and look at the Alaska Native Medical Center, and nothing is rationed. People walk in, they get best health care in the world. And that's the way it should be. Right now, we're rationing healthcare based on money, based on cost. So there are people who are being denied healthcare because they're not able to pay.
If Democrats take the House, there will likely be a move to reverse course on development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and close it to drilling. Shane says he won't support that unless it's accompanied by other programs or spending that will make up for the jobs Alaska would lose if development isn't allowed. If Shane wins the Democratic primary, he'll be on the ballot in November to vie for Don Young's seat. If Shane doesn't win the primary, he says he will not seek to get on the ballot for the general by other means. Elise Galvin, an independent candidate vying for the Democratic nomination, says the same. It means they won't split the Democratic vote as they try to unseat Young. Also running in the Democratic primary are Christopher Cummings of Ketchikan, who says he wants to raise awareness of addiction and suicide, and Carol Hafner, who lists a South Dakota address and says she opposes drilling in Anwar. They've reported no campaign spending. The primary is Tuesday, August 21. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
State marijuana regulators will take public comment on the latest draft proposal for allowing on-site use of marijuana in authorized stores. That's after the Marijuana Control Board voted this week for a 60-day comment period and to hold a public hearing. Regulators have gone back and forth on the issue of on-site use for several years, adopting rules that contemplate on-site use, but never finalizing how that would work. The draft calls for consumption areas separated from other areas of a retail store by walls and a secure door, a smoke-free place for employees, and a special ventilation system. The draft also allows for outdoor consumption areas if the board finds that compatible with neighboring uses. Local governments, via ordinance or a ballot question, could bar on-site use or aspects of it, such as smoking. The organizer of a marijuana festival where people consumed pot inside a designated tent has been fined $2,500. The Associated Press reports that Alaska Marijuana Control Board on Wednesday fined Alaska Hemp Fest director Nikki Rapana $10,000 with $7,500 suspended if she has no future violations. Hemp Fest was held in June in Wasilla. The fine is the board's second. The board fined Anchorage Cannabis Classic held in May, citing public consumption and other alleged violations. Board member Jeff Ankerfeldt, Sitka's police chief, says Rapana was warned in advance that an advertised smoking tent violated Alaska law. Recreational use of marijuana is legal, but public consumption is still prohibited. The board says the tent was a public place because passes were available to anyone 21 and older to purchase.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. The North Slope Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invite public participation at meetings on Wednesday, August 22nd and Thursday, August 23rd, starting at 9 a.m. at the Inupiat Heritage Center in Utqiagvik. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Last week, the Bureau of Land Management kicked off the environmental review process for what could be one of Alaska's biggest future oil developments. In the past, this process has taken years, but the Trump administration is trying to dramatically shorten that time frame. Environmental groups worry a faster review won't do enough to protect the Arctic wilderness. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
Joe Balash, Interior's Assistant Secretary of Land and Minerals Management, thinks paring down the government's environmental review process just makes sense.
When it comes to a decision maker such as myself, who has to make decisions on multiple fronts every week, you know, you can't legitimately sit down and read through 2,500 pages of analysis.
Environmental reviews are meant to look at all the potential impacts of projects like mines and oil developments on federal land and try to avoid or at least minimize those impacts. But Balash argues the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, has gotten way out of hand.
These complex, mind-numbing NEPA documents have become just a field for very specialized consultants and litigants, and it really is, not serving the public interest.
This is something Republicans and industry groups have been saying for a long time. They argue environmental groups and left-leaning administrations are using NEPA to slow or halt development. So last year, the Interior Department's Deputy Secretary signed an order to speed along the NEPA process. Among other things, it caps the number of pages agencies can fill with analysis about environmental impacts at 300. Previous environmental reviews have been well over 1,000 pages.
If we can't describe the project, the alternatives, the affected environment, and the impacts in 150 or 300 pages, then we're probably using too many words to describe something.
Balash says one of the first projects in Alaska to benefit from the Trump administration's truncated environmental review is a major oil development ConocoPhillips is proposing on the North Slope. Last year, Conoco announced a huge oil discovery in the federally managed National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, or NPRA. Conoco's plans to recover all that oil involve a central processing facility, an airstrip, pipelines, and up to 5 drill pads with up to 50 wells on each pad. It's a big deal, and it's called the Willow Project.
It's not just a step forward in the NPRA, it's one of those big leaps forward.
Susan Colony is with the Audubon Society in Anchorage. Audubon keeps close tabs on NPRA. The reserve encompasses important habitat for a huge number of migratory birds. Colony thinks it's a mistake for the Trump administration to apply the faster, shorter environmental review to the Willow Project.
These public lands that belong to us, they belong to people on the North Slope, they belong to people, you know, all over the U.S. They're important, and we need to take the time and the consideration to think about these things, and especially for a place as complex and sensitive as the Arctic landscape.
Colony says Audubon doesn't oppose the Willow oil development at this point. They're waiting to see how things play out. But she thinks the Trump administration's streamlined review could mean they miss something important in the process.
That's the risk of doing something too quick, too hasty. You open yourself up to those errors.
For its part, Conoco thinks an environmental review that takes less time doesn't mean it will cut corners. In an emailed statement, a company spokesperson said, quote, ConocoPhillips supports a robust and efficient analysis of the Willow development in line with the requirements of NEPA. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Erosion is a widespread problem throughout Alaska, with at least 31 villages and towns facing imminent threats. In Utqiagvik, a lot of that erosion is connected with storm damage. As sea ice continues to trend toward coming in later and leaving earlier, it makes the coastline vulnerable to storms for more of the year. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Ravenna Koenig has this report from the coast of Utqiagvik about some of the efforts to battle that erosion problem.
A big North Slope Borough truck rumbles down the road that divides downtown Utqiagvik from the Chukchi Sea. Scott Evans is behind the wheel. He works for the department that's responsible for emergency management and disaster coordination within the North Slope Borough.
So this area right here kind of takes the brunt of any storm that we hit. Starting right here is called Sadie's Playground. Right, most of these are homes right here.
The homes we're looking at have sandbags stacked outside. Evans tells me that during a storm that hit Utqiagvik last September, this area at the base of downtown was flooded.
These lower houses right here, the lower-lying houses, the water certainly reached them. Well, not inside their houses, but it comes up to the houses for sure.
The cost of the damage from that storm to the North Slope Borough is still being figured out, but the rough estimate is $8 million. That reflects damage to roads and the structures that were supposed to protect the town from storm surge. A seawall, sandbags, and a 5-mile gravel berm that spans much of the coastline. The borough is also worried about what might happen in the future to things like a critical water and sewer pump station, the drinking water lagoons, and a decommissioned military landfill site located right by the beach. Utqiagvik is losing ground, and part of that has to do with these storms.
If you're here and you watch a storm and you watch the way we have to just continue to try to throw gravel at it and watch what it does to it, you realize that it's a losing battle, right? I mean, you see what you do. Yep, we go put a wall up there and it just washes out to the sea.
Right now, the borough's main tool for combating the problem involves, like Scott Evans said, throwing gravel at it. They've got a seawall made of wire mesh filled with gravel bags, huge super sacks full of gravel, and a gravel berm they have to keep building up. The height varies, but even at 20 feet, it can be wiped out in a matter of hours if the right storm comes along.
We know that the berm isn't the long-term solution, but that's what we have the ability to do right now. So that's what we are continuing to do because we know it's slowing everything down.
When the damage from a single storm event goes beyond what the North Slope Borough can pay for on its own, it can seek help from the state and federal governments. That happened in 2015 and again with the storm last September. But there's a lot of damage from smaller events that the borough is on the hook for. On top of that, they're running out of material to hold back the ocean.
Gravel here is almost akin to gold or silver. It's that hard to find anymore.
Bob Shears works for the borough in capital improvement and is one of the people on the North Slope who's thinking about how they're going to address this problem in the longer term. He says that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will be releasing a study for public comment later this month, looking at engineering options that could protect the town for years into the future. The Corps is still deciding exactly what that would look like. But essentially, the idea is to armor the coastline in front of Utqiagvik with big 2.5-ton rocks so that from the ocean, it would look like a continuous rock wall. A preliminary estimate for all that is $120 million. About a third would be paid for by the North Slope Borough. The rest would have to come from Congress. Shear says that's nowhere close to a done deal.
This game is not over till it's over. We can lose just as easily as we can win.
And even if they do get the money, Shears thinks it could be a while, which means they have to figure out something else in the meantime. Back at the Utqiagvik coastline, I asked Scott Evans if the borough is ready for the storm season that's just around the corner.
Would we like to be more prepared? Would we like to have other solutions out there that are more robust than we have right now? Of course. But the reality is, this is where we're at right now.
He says they're getting federal and state assistance to build things back to where they were before last year's storm and make things a little stronger for the future. The rest, they'll have to cross their fingers for and hope that the coming storms don't outpace their ability to fend them off. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, and Ravenna Koenig in Upyadvik. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night, Smitch.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. It's back to school time. Backpack ready, school supplies check. But what about your child's vaccinations? Before school starts is a great time to talk to your health care provider or a local public health center to make sure your child's vaccinations are current. Vaccinations protect your child and the whole community against serious diseases. Learn more, including where to get free vaccines, at immunize.dhss.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by DHSS. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.